Talking now about the flu and the flu season with Dr. William Scheckler, who has long associations with the Wisconsin Medical Society and with its Council on Health of the Public. I think the name has changed, but the council has been very active. He's a specialist in infectious disease, epidemiology, and internal medicine, emeritus professor at the UW Medical School's Department of Medicine and Family Medicine, and an epidemiologist at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison. He's been with us in the past, and we've always had a good time talking with him about a variety of issues, and we're taking up flu with him today. Dr. Scheckler, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Good to be here again, Larry.
And I should let everybody know, if you would like to join in with a question for him, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. The flu always seems to come in the wintertime, and there has been, I guess, some question, at least among lay people, of why do we get it in the winter and why does it spread in the winter months? And I understand that the Mount Sinai School of Medicine has published some findings on this that apparently say that the virus adapts better in cold, dry weather.
Yeah, you betcha. Actually, we've known that epidemiologically for a long time, Larry.
Yeah.
The northern hemisphere gets the flu, influenza that is, the influenza virus spread around when it's cold and when it's dry, and when our respiratory tracts perhaps aren't as juicy as they are during summer months and as protective as they are during summer months. You know, we have invented indoor heating, which is very important for the northern climes, just like air conditioning is very important for Houston. And the consequence of that is that the air inside is drier as well as the air outside is drier. And the flu virus can attach to our inside of our nose and mouth much better under those circumstances because our defenses are down a little bit.
Yeah, we're cold and we're miserable sometimes.
So what the scientists did was actually do a bunch of laboratory experiments that demonstrated several things about validating what we've known for a long time.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Joan in Stoddard has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Joan. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 52 years old, and I haven't had the flu in well over 20 years, and why should I get a flu shot? I'm concerned that I already seem to be able to fight off the flu, and why would I want to stop that what's working?
Well, do you have any contact with kids, grandkids, children, high school students, college students?
Yeah.
What you would find in getting a flu shot, it's not going to be 100% effective. It never has been. But in you, a young person, as I like to say, like you, it'll be 80 to 90% effective in fighting off influenza. And if any of those kids who are the main amplifiers of influenza in the country come home and visit grandma or visit mom and have influenza, you're liable to get it. Now, we haven't had a major outbreak of influenza in a number of years, so we're probably due for one about this winter. And it usually occurs here in Wisconsin sometime around Christmas when we all mingle together as families. So, yes, you've been very lucky.
If my immune system is working, I'm concerned that if I put a flu vaccine in there, and why? I mean, I want my immune system to continue to fight the flu bug, like it obviously has been able to. I'm in constant contact with the public all day. I'm a healthcare provider, and
must get a flu shot.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's telling me that. But
your immune system would welcome a flu shot and say, thank you very much for finally doing that for me.
it wouldn't compromise her immune system to have the shot.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, it would. If you have an intact immune system, that's when all of these shots, all of the vaccinations work the best.
Oh. So, Dr. Scheckler says, go get a shot, Joan.
We'll see.
It doesn't sound like she's going to do it, but if she works, if you're in a position where you work with a lot of people, if you get the flu and you can pass it on to other people.
You can not only pass it on to other people, even if you're not terribly symptomatic from it, which can happen if you have partial immunity, you can still pass it on to other people, and that's the scariest thing.
That's the scariest thing. Let's see. Carrie in Appleton, we'll go to you next. Hi, Carrie. Thanks for calling. Or Corey, I'm sorry.
Corey. Hi. Well, your answer kind of leads into my question. I'm in my mid-40s, short of being anorexic in early stages of recovery. I'm in wonderful health. I have a 5-year-old, an 11-year-old, and I'm married. Everyone gets sick except for me. If I get the flu once a year that it lasts 24 hours, that's a lot. I don't come down with cold, strep throat, anything. And someone once mentioned to me, maybe you're a carrier and you don't get it. You just carry it to everyone else. Is there such a thing?
It is possible to have influenza and not know it. However, to my knowledge, there is no chronic carrier of the influenza virus. It's there and then it's gone. Again, I think that if your immune system is working, you're going to protect your kids, or you're going to protect yourself from your kids by getting the shot. Now, you're not in an age group when we would automatically say you should get the flu shot. There's plenty of it available, thank goodness, this year. So you can certainly, you could certainly get the flu shot. The 24-hour illness that you had is not influenza. It's very important to make that distinction. I just had a cold, which was a what we call an upper respiratory infection, a virus. Didn't get much of a fever. Didn't have any fever, actually. Just had a snotty nose. And my voice got even lower and more interesting to listen to, according to my wife. But those illnesses and the diarrhea and the vomiting and so forth, those are totally different viruses. And the influenza vaccine won't have any impact on them at all.
So the aches and the pains, I had 24 hours of, I was shaking, I think maybe with a slight fever, and I ached in every joint I had. It lasted about 24 hours, I was up and around.
Did you cough at all?
No.
So that was not influenza. Influenza, characteristically, you have a fever, you ache all over, your muscles and your joints ache, and you have a cough. It's a sort of a lower respiratory infection or a systemic viral infection rather than just localized one place or another. Now, frequently people, if they have a fever with an adenovirus or some other type of virus, will ache. And when they just have a fever, they'll feel lousy. I know I do.
Yeah.
But that's not influenza. So okay. It's just this one type of virus you're trying to protect yourself and others from.
Okay. I have one more quick question.
Sure.
My husband had the flu shot a long time ago, and he got violently ill from it, and he will never, ever get a flu shot. He's going to be 55. He said, I'm never getting a flu shot again. And I'm leery about getting one because he got sick from it, and I've heard
How did he get sick? In what way was he sick?
He had the flu, but it was bad. Like, not just slight case, but full-blown.
He was shaking, a cough?
The cough, the aching, everything, the vomiting.
Well, there's several possibilities. It's extremely unlikely that the reaction that he had was to the flu vaccine itself. One of the problems that we have in medicine is when we give a shot, when we give a vaccination, and then you get sick within a day or two, you always say, well, what's the most recent thing I can remember that happened to me? And it was the shot. Therefore, it must be the shot. So it could have been that he was exposed to influenza before the vaccine was effective. It could have been something totally different, unrelated to influenza. And it's very unlikely that it was the shot itself. Same thing happens with when people get nausea and vomiting. They think of the last meal they ate and said, oh, well, it was from that restaurant. I just know it was from that restaurant. It was from my mother-in-law's cooking or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
He should try it again. He should experiment again next year at least once more.
Okay.
All right.
No, this year, Larry.
Oh, well, he took it. Oh, did he have it this year or was it
No, it was quite some time ago.
And oh, talk him into it.
Okay.
Talk him into it.
Actually, Larry, there's one other thing about quite some time ago that's important to mention. An influenza vaccine is made, the antigen has grown up, the virus has grown up in embryonated eggs. And in the olden days, my youth, back in the 60s and 70s and even early 80s, the purification of the vaccine was not anywhere near as good as it is now. So there were more localized reactions and even fever that you got from the vaccine back in the 60s and 70s. It was, looking at electron microscopes of it, it looked more like chicken soup. And yeah. Now it's a very, very purified vaccine. So that's another reason to not use old information in deciding to whether to get a flu shot this year or not.
Okay. Well, we'll have to sit down and have a talk again. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Corey, for calling. Appreciate it. And Joan in Dunn County, I think you're next. Hi, Joan.
Well, hi. Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for calling.
I heard, and I'm hoping the doctor can explain more. It was either on NPR or WPR about, and I think they said that it's got all the flu-like symptoms. It begins with an M. Of course, I can't remember it. And it is resistant to any care. And it doesn't matter if you're in good health or in bad health. And the only care that can be provided is palliative care. And a number of people have died from this, not growing, but this, I mean, it is growing, not tons yet, but the CDC is quite concerned, so they said.
What? Do you know anything about that, Dr. Sheckler?
Well, in terms of influenza, the bird flu, of course, is the one that's concerned us the most. Very few cases in the last 6 months or so, most all of it in Asia, not entirely. And it so far hasn't spread very easily from person to person. That's the biggest fear that we have, is that this particular virus is going to modify itself and be able to jump from person to person as easily as regular seasonal influenza does. It's about 60% fatality of the cases we've been able to identify. So bird flu is nasty, but if it's something other, I mean, there's a lot of other viruses out there. There's all kinds of stuff in Africa, for example, that can kill you and you can't do anything about it. And we worry about those all the time in terms of the ease of transportation these days.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dr. William Sheckler, our guest today, a specialist in infectious disease, epidemiology, and internal medicine. Pleased to have him with us. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the flu today in the flu season with Dr. William Sheckler, epidemiologist at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison. Really pleased to have him with us. He's an emeritus professor at the UW Medical School's Department of Medicine and Family Medicine. And Dr. Sheckler, someone called in and wondered what you think about kids from the ages of 5 to 21 getting a flu shot. Is it worth it? Concerns that you think there might be out there?
Absolutely. Daycare centers and schools, elementary schools, high schools, colleges are one of the major places when we do have epidemics that the flu gets spread into the community quite easily. This age group is now all recommended to have influenza vaccine. They can have either the flu mist nasal spray, which is still more expensive than the shot, or the shot. Both are quite effective and quite satisfactory. I can put it this way, I guess. My four grandkids, 3, 5, 8, and 10, all got flu shots this year, as did my daughter and son-in-law. So yeah. So they're listening to old grandpa, and I would recommend that for all the kids out there.
Great. Shannon in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Shannon.
Hi. I was wondering if your guest could back up a little bit and describe how vaccinations work, because I've found in conversations with quite a few people some fairly well-educated people that seem to think that a vaccination somehow is a crutch or weakens the immune system by relying on something external. And I think it would be good for people to understand that it's actually something that helps your own immune system work. And perhaps if a doctor will describe it, people will listen because they haven't listened to me.
Okay. Thank you for calling.
Well, they don't always listen to me either, but thank you for that question. There's a cellular immunity in the body, and there's a humoral or fluid immunity in the body. And the cells fight TB and some of the big bugs. And in general, the humoral immunity is what we're talking about with influenza vaccination. And with influenza are most of the viruses where we get gamma globulins that you may have heard of, or little proteins in the blood that attach to the virus and destroy it in one way or another. And they also facilitate different kinds of cells to ingest or consume, eat up the virus and lock it up in the front of the nose. When it first tries knocking on the door of the front of the nose, the cells there recognize the virus. The advantage of having this so-called extraneous protein is that the body hasn't seen it before. And if the body hasn't seen it before, and it's recognized in this dead form or the form that can't cause illness, the body will recognize it when it does see it again. So it's not doing anything bad to your immune system. It is helping your immune system by providing it the information. It's like loading in a program, a software program, into your immune system that can work when it recognizes the villainous viruses out there.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Thanks. Shannon, thank you. Appreciate your call. Maddie in Waupaca, it's your turn. Hi, Maddie.
I'd like to ask, do most flu shots, I have a couple questions to start out with. I'd like to ask, do most flu shots have mercury in it? Thimerosal preservative?
Thimerosal preservative, yes, that's ethyl mercury. All the exposure warnings that you've read about, heard about, is methyl mercury. It's a different type of mercury. You're exposed to ethyl mercury all the time in drinking water. About a gallon and a half, you got about the same much mercury as you do in a shot of flu with thimerosal in it. So, in effect, you only get the flu shot once a year. It's ubiquitous. It's in canned tuna. It's been in canned tuna. I remember a number of years ago, the Smithsonian had a can from the very first canned tuna from 100 years ago, and they checked the level of mercury in the tuna. Same amount as we have in tuna today. So. Mercury's been out there. It's a part of the natural environment, and the mercury that's used as a preservative to prevent secondary bacterial infection in doses of influenza vaccine is perfectly safe. 22 different medical organizations, including the American Academy of Family Physicians, Infectious Diseases Society of America, have gotten together and say it's perfectly safe. All the scientific evidence proves that it's safe, doesn't cause autism, doesn't do all these terrible things that people write about, blog about, and worry about.
I wanted to ask a question about, I know that, well, I have an autistic grandson, and he had a flu shot that had mercury in it a year ago, and after that his IQ plummeted, and there's no other reason for, you know, that we can find out why his IQ has plummeted. And it seems to me that there are some individuals whose body does not shed the mercury like most people. And I just feel like to be on the safe side, it would be best to ask for children to ask for the flu shots that do not have the mercury in.
Because of these fears, the vaccine industry and the CDC they're trying to come up with vaccines, and you're quite right. There are flu shots, especially for kids, that don't have thimerosal in them. I'm convinced by the scientific evidence. A lot of places around the world in Western Europe and the United States have looked at the whole issue of influenza vaccine and all vaccines and the occurrence of autism, which is a is a horrible problem to deal with. I'm very sympathetic to the difficulties your grandson has, but it's not the flu shot. And there's a lot of good evidence now that it's not the flu shot. That doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of people out there and a lot of websites and a lot of law firms that says it is the mercury in the flu shot. They're wrong and I'm right, but it's not me that's right. It's the huge weight of scientific evidence that's right. But if you're really worried about it, you can get a flu shot without thimerosal in it.
Yes. Thank you for calling, Maddie. Appreciate your call. Marilyn in Superior, we turn to you next. Hi, Marilyn.
I've got a question about the symptoms. Are diarrhea and vomiting part of the symptoms of the influenza that you get a flu shot for? Because I think that a lot of people use the word stomach flu and influenza together, and I think they're two different things.
They are indeed two different things, and the confusion with stomach flu, which isn't an influenza at all, there's norovirus and other things that can cause you to vomit and have diarrhea. Very uncommonly does influenza, which, as I said earlier, is a systemic viral infection, cause gastrointestinal symptoms. It doesn't say that it can never occur, but the so-called stomach flu is not influenza. It doesn't have anything to do with the influenza virus, which is principally a lower respiratory infection. Gets into your lungs, causes fever, and you're quite right. Now, if you can figure out a way to make the public understand that, let me know.
Maybe as a doctor, you could come up with a new term and not use the word flu anymore. Because if we didn't say stomach flu, they wouldn't get the idea that that's related to a flu shot.
Yeah. We'll have to come up with another name.
Well, we toyed a couple of years ago with saying influenza vaccination and not flu shot, and using the term influenza all the time, except that the public is so used to using the term flu shot, and it's so easy to use and recognize that we just kind of, as an infectious disease community, gave up
on it. Thanks, Marilyn, for calling. Appreciate your call. Cheryl in Iron Mountain, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Larry. Great program.
Thanks.
I have a question for the doctor. I haven't had the flu for about 10 years, and I got it this year before Halloween. And I heard what he said about you can't catch it from the vaccine, but, 8 days later I came down sick as a dog. And I've been under a lot of stress, and I've been reading that psychological stress can cause your immunity system to pretty much break down, and you can catch colds and flu pretty easily. But anyway, here's my question. I had a really rough couple of weeks. I still have the cough. I mean, all these weeks later.
Yeah.
A friend of mine had a child who she thought came down with the flu. Took him to the doctor, and he got something called Tamiflu. What's the deal on Tamiflu?
Well, there's two very interesting things. First of all, when you get a flu shot, it doesn't take effect at the very earliest until 10 days after you get the shot. It's usually more like 2 weeks, so you just missed it in terms of your own protection.
I wish I would have missed it, Doc.
Well, you just missed the advantage of the flu shot. It wasn't the flu shot that gave you the flu, if it was influenza. In terms of the second question...
The Tamiflu.
Yeah, Tamiflu and Relenza are two anti-influenza medications. They work to minimize the symptoms of influenza if you take them within 48 hours of the first clinical symptom you have, which isn't easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
They are out there. They are available. They've been available. It's only good for influenza A, not influenza B. We had a drug that worked for both of them, but it doesn't work anymore, amantadine. And unfortunately, even some of the we've used this, obviously, somewhat experimentally in the serious cases of bird flu, and the bird flu virus, smart little sucker that it is, has developed some resistance to some of these antivirals.
Mm.
So one more question. So, when I get a cold or the flu, I don't go to the doctor because I know it's a virus and I don't want all this, antibacterials and antibiotics for things that aren't bacterial. Do they do some kind of test to determine if it's influenza A and if Tamiflu or the other one will help you?
Generally speaking, in Wisconsin, we have a network of practices around the state that keep track of people with lower respiratory infections. And when it reaches a certain critical level in December, January, they're doing tests. They're doing viral cultures and viral tests. And we can tell there's a rapid test that can be effective, but only when there's a lot of influenza circulating. And we sort of depend on the epidemiologists in the state health department for letting us know. And my colleague John Tempty in the Department of Family Medicine here at the UW also has information for family docs and primary care providers out there that's very useful. Some hospitals, like St. Mary's, does cell cultures, does influenza cultures, and when we admit somebody to the hospital with possible influenza, it's extraordinarily useful to know, do they really have flu or not? But by that time, they're usually been sick for several days.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl, for calling. Chuck in Milwaukee, we'll go to you next. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. I just had a quick question for the doctor, as he's briefly addressed this already through a couple of previous callers who had seemed to indicate that they had gotten sick from the flu shot. And to my understanding, there are currently two forms of flu, or influenza, I guess we should call it, vaccination. One is a sort of a nasal mist, which is a weakened form of the virus, and the other is the actual flu shot, or influenza shot, which is the dead form. From my understanding, it's impossible to get the influenza from the dead form of the flu shot. Just wondering if you could clarify that. It seems
sure
to me to be a myth, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right.
You are quite right. You cannot. Let me emphasize that again. It is impossible to get influenza from the flu shot. It is also not possible to get influenza from the modified virus that's in the nasal mist. I've spent a lot of time talking to the people that make that vaccine because they were not happy with me by saying I wanted to wait a little bit and see if there were any side effects from it, and I wanted them to bring the price down. But it's also very effective, and it so far as I know, hasn't caused any problem like on rare occasions the live polio vaccine used to cause. So both of them are perfectly safe, but surely the flu shot, which is the one that's most widely available, most cost-effective, cannot cause influenza.
All right. Amy in Peshtigo, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I have quite a few questions, actually. And then I'll just ask them all, and then I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
Why does there need to be mercury, aluminum, formaldehyde, and everything else under the sun in a vaccine? And is it possible that it is the reaction to the vaccine, like you had just mentioned to the other gentleman, that people are getting and not the flu themselves, which is pretty much just as bad as the flu? I've also heard that a person receiving a flu vaccine for about 5 years in a row is 10 times more likely to develop Alzheimer's. And isn't it true that getting a flu shot with the correct strain is pretty much like a shot in the dark? They're pretty much not going to get the strain that's coming around.
Okay.
And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Okay.
Okay, I'll go backwards on this one. Experts in the epidemiology of influenza meet in the spring of the year because of the duration of time it takes to make the vaccine currently. And that's one of the big improvements that we could make. If we could make this a lot faster than using embryonated eggs, everyone would be better off. They try to predict which is the best mixture of viruses, usually from some from Asia, that we are going to face in North America and Western Europe. I would say their batting average is almost as good as Brett Favre's passing average this year. Occasionally they miss. A couple of years ago, we had a California strain that wasn't in the virus, and yours truly actually had the shot and had a mild form of influenza, which I didn't appreciate. And I did culture myself because I have access to that, and it was, in fact, the California strain. So it isn't perfect, but it's very close to as good as we can get right now. There's two types of influenza A and one type of influenza B in every vaccine. The Alzheimer's thing is very much like the autism thing. It's simply not true. That doesn't mean you can't Google Alzheimer's disease and influenza vaccine and find somebody that says it is true. And they might even have a PhD or an MD after their name. But it isn't true. It's just wrong, and it's tragically wrong. It doesn't make Alzheimer's worse. It can make you live longer if you have Alzheimer's, if you avoid influenza. That's an ethical question. That's not a medical question. The reaction, as I said earlier, is much worse in the old vaccines than it is now. All of the things that you mentioned, especially the thimerosal, were to protect against contamination by bacteria. You may remember a couple of years ago we couldn't get a whole batch of vaccine from the United Kingdom because the vaccine was contaminated with serratia, which is a bacteria. And how it got there still isn't clear to me, but it's secondary contamination with the multi-dose vials that we use so frequently that are the most cost-effective to make sure that you don't shove any bacteria in there and then grow that up. You're sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Thank you very much for calling in those questions, Amy. Carol in Clintonville, it's your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. I have a question. My husband is allergic to eggs. He had a pretty serious reaction when he had a flu shot about 5 years ago. His blood pressure dropped and ended up in the hospital. So is there anything he can do? Can he take the flu mist? He's 56, so he's sort of out of the age range for that?
Oh, well, a flu mist is made with eggs too, but it doesn't have any egg in it, as far as I know. I would have to, you're quite right, he shouldn't have the flu shot because it is made with eggs. I would have to look at the literature on flu mist. It's certainly worth asking your doctor that question because it is a good virus. It does work well.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling. And William and Boyd, it's your turn. Hello, William.
Hello. 15 years ago, I had Guillain-Barré syndrome, and since that time, I've had conflicting advice as to whether former GBS patients should take a flu shot.
Excellent question, and I trust you're fully recovered from your Guillain-Barré.
Yes, I am.
Back in the 70s, with something called the swine flu vaccine, we did a national sort of emergency immunization of everybody with swine flu, and they kept a computer card back in the old 80. You really have to be old enough to remember the 80-column IBM cards. You had a whole great.
I am that old.
Well, me too.
Well, anyway, the that's where they showed that there was an association with swine flu and Guillain-Barré. Subsequently, they've looked at flu vaccine practically annually, and there is no clear association with it, but the package insert and the informed consent form that you were supposed to sign says that if you've ever had Guillain-Barré, you should not get the flu shot. And you are supposedly too old for the nasal mist. That's because we haven't tested it on older people.
Mm.
Okay.
That's just labeling. It would be interesting to know. I mean, it's one of those things where fear of lawsuits trumps the available science.
Yeah.
Okay. But as far as you know, the available science is not showing that correlation anymore.
That is correct.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, William. And Mary Lois, your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm calling from Oshkosh, and I want to hit on what I was going to talk about a little bit previously when someone called in because they had egg allergy.
Yes.
Okay. I was tested way back in the 80s that I was mildly positive to egg whites, but I do eat eggs, and I have never had any problem with that. Here's the deal. I'm just finishing cardio rehab, so you know I'm at risk. I'm 71 years old, and I broke down and got my first flu shot yesterday because they assured me they had an egg white-free flu shot.
Uh-huh.
And it was thimerosal-free. Now, that is not egg whites. I had no reaction yesterday. I'm still surviving. Do I have anything to be cautious with?
All right.
I guess I could make a house call on you. After this show, I'm driving up to Door County for a meeting, and I'll go right past Oshkosh. But no, you don't have anything to worry about. I assume that the test that you had for egg whites was a skin test, a prick test?
Yes.
Yeah, well, those are not very accurate as far as food allergies are concerned, number one.
Okay.
Number two, if you've been eating eggs all these years, forget about it.
Don't worry about it.
And thiomersal is mercury. It doesn't have anything to do with eggs.
Yeah, that's what I hear now. She didn't. The nurse didn't explain it that way. And today, hearing you explain it, and I thought, well, what does that have to do with all the egg whites in China?
Yeah, so to speak. You're right, Mary Lois. Thank you for calling. Maria in Green Bay. Hi to you.
Yes, good morning. I have a question. I am 67 years old, in good health. But some years ago, I had an allergic reaction to a tetanus shot. And since then, I have been afraid to get any kind of a immunization. And I've discussed a flu shot with my doctor, and he is not really pushing it. So I don't know what to do here.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to talk to your doctor, but the tetanus... what's in tetanus shots, tetanus toxoid shots, first of all, they're also improved. And what's in tetanus shots is quite different what's in influenza vaccine. Tetanus doesn't have anything to do with, you know, growing them up in eggs and so forth and so on, although it might have some thimerosal, but that doesn't give you acute reactions or allergic reactions or pain. So I would, at your young age, I would encourage you to get a flu shot. One of the major protections that we would have in this country, should we ever be exposed to a bird flu pandemic, would be if everybody has their seasonal influenza shots, because then we'll have a pretty good fix on the fact that if they get sick, it isn't the seasonal influenza, which is going to occur like it does every year with or without a pandemic. So, yep, go ahead and get the flu shot and tell your doctor. Dr. Scheckler said,
it was okay.
It was a good idea.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling, Marie. And Dr. Scheckler, thank you. It's always fun. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we'll look forward to another visit. Hope you'll come back.
Oh, well, this has been 4 years now, Larry. I guess I can come back as long as I get my flu shot and I'm in good health, I'll come back.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Bill Scheckler is a specialist in infectious disease, epidemiology, and internal medicine, emeritus professor at UW Medical School's Department of Medicine and Family Medicine, and he's also an epidemiologist at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison, associated with the Wisconsin Medical Society as well, pleasure to have him with us, and he'll be back. We'll talk with him some more. He gives you some pretty straightforward answers. And you'll get some straight answers from Dr. Lowell Lakritz coming up next as he talks about preventing and treating dental disease. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.